Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. A D.C. police officer is the target of a lawsuit by the American Civil Liberties Union. The lawsuit filed on behalf of Denise Price accuses Officer Joseph Gupton of a warrantless search of her property. You may remember Price's son, Jeffrey Price, was killed last May during a dirt bike accident. 1 week later, Officer Gupton showed up at the Price family home.
Excuse me, sir. I don't want you on my property. Can you leave off my property, please? Can you leave off my property, please? Can you leave off my property, please? You don't have a warrant. I don't want you on my property. Without a search warrant. Can you leave off my property? This is the third time I'm asking.
Call 911 and get it on the register that he's in the property. He's on the property without a warrant.
Can you leave off my property, please, sir? Sir, can you leave my property, please?
Can you tell us what you're looking for?
No. Can you leave off my
property? Can you leave off the property then? You don't have no warrant.
Tonight, we are examining not only these allegations, but other recent incidents where the actions of the D.C. police are called into question when dealing with detaining suspects. Did they cross the line? Well, my guests tonight are Denise Price, mother of Jeffrey Price, Jay Brown, the brother of Denise Price. He shot the video you just heard. And Michael Perloff, he is an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union office here in D.C. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
So let me start with you. Ms. Price, what we heard was just a very short segment of a video that was taken by your brother. It's almost 5 minutes long. Just kind of give me an understanding of what happened when police showed up at your house. Because one of the things that I find interesting is that Officer Gupton was not alone. There were several officers with him. Tell me what happened.
On the day of May 11th, two police cruisers pulled down in front of my home, got out, looked at, used flashlights to look in the car windows of the cars parked in front of my home. Then they proceeded into my daughter and my yard. I asked them on several occasions, what you here for, if you don't have a warrant, I'm asking that you leave because I felt that I was disrespected. Had they asked me, could they search the yard or had any kind of communication with me, I would have welcomed them with open arms to search my yard because I don't have anything to hide. I've been there for 18 years.
Were you surprised that they showed up?
Yes, I was.
In the video, there can be seen at least four officers, including Officer Gupton. In the video, he doesn't say very much, if anything, at all. What outside, before or after that video, did he say anything to you at all? Did he say what he was looking for? Did he say why he was there?
No. Mm-hmm. No, he didn't. As my brother asked him, can you at least tell us why you're here? And his response was no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was the next question I was going to ask because, you know, Jay, you took the video. Did they have any exchange with you at all as to why they were there or what they were looking for?
The video that you all have seen is exactly what happened. There was no prior conversation. There was a cruiser that came through and they stopped. And there was a 6th District cruiser. They stopped and they stared in my sister's face for a few seconds and he pulled off. And then Officer Gupton Sergeant Smalls and Officer Whitehead showed up. At that time, I was looking because they started searching our cars. They started searching my sister's car, and they started searching my car, and I was trying to figure out what is going on. We had kids in the yard. My granddaughter, my nieces, my neighbor, all these kids are like six and under. We had my nephew who's 12. And we didn't know what was going on, but we were not going to hinder anything that they were trying to do because, you know, that would have been unlawful for us. So we just stepped out of the way. There was no communication. There was silence. I pulled my video camera out, and as you see, I didn't say anything until he approached my niece's backyard, and I said, hey, do you have a warrant? You need a warrant to go back there in that backyard. And my sister called me when he went around to the across the fence to her yard, and they were like, hey, he's in my backyard. So I'm just recording. I'm not trying to become a part of whatever problem, not trying to allow them to bait me into whatever issues they got going on. But there was no sense of urgency from these police officers. The kids were still out there. They never say, hey, get the kids in. It's a dangerous situation. Let's make sure the kids are safe. They never said anything. They never responded to us at all. We asked questions. What people are missing, when the officers first pulled up and she asked, you know, why are you here? She asked them, can I have your names? They totally ignored her, and that's against the general orders. That's before they even went in the yard. Mm-hmm. So once they got in the yard, we asked them repeatedly, hey, do you have a warrant? What are you here for? And there was no response. And we felt like it may have been some retaliation from them killing my nephew on May 4th and me and my sister speaking out against them, because they did have one officer, Tyrone Wallace, who reached out to a possible witness to the them murdering my nephew.
And let's be clear about that, because we are talking about two different incidents. Obviously, as I said in the beginning, Jeffrey Price was killed a week before.
Yes,
he was riding a dirt bike. His dirt bike collided with a police SUV, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And he died in that incident. And that incident remains controversial in and of itself. So I don't want people to misconstrue that we are talking about.
What I'm leading to is the reason that I
believe that
it was retaliation. This is my reason at that particular time. I was like, okay, we didn't criticize these officers or police for what they did to my nephew. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, my reason, because it was some factual events that happened 2 days after that that lead me to believe these guys are still pressing us out, and they were wrong. What was horrific was that we were grieving.
Mm-hmm.
We were planning a funeral. We were crossing the T's and dotting the I's and crossing the T's, because we were just grieving, just sitting in the yard trying to explain to the younger relatives what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And when these police officers came up in such a disrespectful way, it was hurtful for me as a man, because I felt emasculated. I couldn't protect my granddaughter. I couldn't protect my daughter. I couldn't protect my sister, not from some bad guys, quote unquote bad guys on the street, but from some police officers who were using their badge to deprive us of our constitutional rights.
We are talking to the family of Jeffrey Price, who was killed last May during a dirt bike accident on the streets of D.C. A week later, police officers came to the home of his mother, Denise Price, and there's video of the police searching the backyard. Tonight we're asking whether or not D.C. police, some have abused their power. Are they violating the Fourth Amendment rights of not only the Price family, but some others in the D.C. area? If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If we can, Mr. Perloff, let's separate the emotion and let's talk about the legal issues here and the basis of a lawsuit that was filed this week against Officer Gupton. Fourth Amendment rights. Give me a little law school 101 and explain to our listeners what that means.
Sure. So I think that it's actually really helpful to start where Jay just left off. When the officers came into Ms. Price's yard, the family was planning a funeral for Jeffrey, who had just died at the hands of MPD. And that gives you an understanding of why Fourth Amendment rights in the home are so important. The Fourth Amendment very clearly protects the privacy and the property rights of people to be in their home, to have somewhere to go to grieve, to have somewhere to go to have private moments with their family members. And that's exactly what Ms. Price, what Jay, what her family were doing when Officer Gupton walked in. There's no place that the Fourth Amendment has protects more strongly than a person's home. And so for an officer to intrude upon this highly protected area, they need to have either a warrant, or if not a warrant, one of the exceptions to the warrant requirement needs to apply. And they need to have probable cause. That is, they need to have some reason to believe that going into this home, going into the yard of a home, is going to reveal evidence, is going to reveal contraband, is going to reveal a suspect. And in this case, Officer Gupton had no warrant. MPD has confirmed that. From our understanding of what MPD has reported, there is no basis to conclude that any of the exceptions to the warrant requirement applied. And the video really shows that it didn't look like the officers were acting in an urgent fashion. They weren't responding to an emergency. And particularly importantly, there was no probable cause. If you look at the video, the officers don't just go into Ms. Price's yard, but they go into several yards. And what that suggests to us is that what was going on here was a fishing expedition. They were looking for something. Maybe it was an object, maybe it was a person. But what they didn't have were a specific set of facts tying that thing to a particular property, in this case, the Price family's property. And you can't do that. You can't go on fishing expeditions and act in a manner consistent with the Fourth Amendment.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810 tonight. We are asking whether or not some D.C. police officers are acting beyond their legal obligation to protect and serve, particularly in Wards 7 and 8 east of the river. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. One thing I do want to say, as of yesterday, D.C. police say they had not seen the lawsuit and could not comment on it. And the Fraternal Order of Police called the lawsuit without merit. Why are you filing a lawsuit against Officer Gupton and not the other officers? Or is there more to the law? Are you filing it beyond? Is Officer Gupton the only target of this?
Well, Officer Gupton was the only officer who walked into Ms. Price's yard in particular. So that's why we've particularly focused on him. That's not to say that the other officers acted in a way that we would expect of people who are entrusted to protect and serve. They didn't stop Officer Gupton from walking in. They didn't respond to Ms. Price, to Jay, to others who were asking them questions. So, you know, there are concerns about that, but we focused on Officer Gupton because he was the only one who actually walked into her yard, at least from what we can see. We've also sued the district because under principles of just basic D.C. law, when you're an employee of the district and you violate someone's rights, the district is responsible for that. And so I think this goes to the kind of broader point, which is that we're concerned about what the district, what MPD has tolerated from its officers in terms of policing east of the river. We're concerned about the fact that according to MPD data, 80% of the people stopped by MPD are black. That 84% of people who have force used against them by MPD are black. And so our hope in filing this litigation is to hold Officer Gupton accountable for his actions, to hold the district accountable for his actions, but also to start pushing for reforms that address these broader problems of disturbing practices in communities of color in this city.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Of course, we are examining not only the allegations regarding Officer Joseph Gupton, but also other incidents where the actions of the D.C. police were called into question when dealing with detaining suspects. Are D.C. police crossing the line? I need you to stay with us. If you are on the line, we're going to talk to you next. Gwen, calling from D.C., Tracy, calling from Upper Marlboro, D, calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to you. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will take your phone calls. Lines are open at 202. 319-781-0202. 319-781-0. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 Satellite Radio. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're examining allegations that some D.C. police officers are abusing their power. Are some of them crossing the line? My guests are Denise Price. She is the mother of Jeffrey Price, who was killed last May in a dirt bike accident in the District of Columbia. Jay Brown, the brother of Denise Price, he shot video of an incident where officers were searching the Price family home, the backyard, that is, and Michael Perloff, attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union here in D.C. The ACLU has filed a lawsuit connected to this incident. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gwen, thanks for hanging on, calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? I give my condolences to the mom. And I wanted to let her know that it's the disrespect of the police officers is just not in Ward 7 and 8. It's in the whole city. I live in a small community over in Ward 4, which is Riggs Park, and they're abusing these kids' rights and people's rights on a regular basis. And that's all I wanted to say pertaining to the law. They're really taking advantage of the situation in the city right now.
Thank you so much. Gwen, thank you so much for giving us a call. Tracy, calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling, Tracy. What's on your mind?
I want to give my condolences to the family first and foremost. I want to say that about 2 months ago, I was on Martin Luther King Avenue in Southeast. I think that's Ward 7 and maybe Ward 8. And I was had my earbuds on, and I was on the phone, and I was going to work. And the police officer stopped me, and she said that I had cursed her out, that I had called her the B word. And I said, excuse me, I'm on my earbuds. Like, why would I have a reason to curse you out? She then proceeded to ask me for my registration and driver's license. I reached in my glove compartment to give her my registration, and unbeknownst to me, I had like a syringe. It appears to look like a syringe like that a diabetic would use. And so I had forgot that the syringe was in there. It was a medicine syringe of my grandson's. So she said, is anybody in your family a diabetic? And I said, excuse me. And she said, you heard what I said. Is anybody in your family a diabetic? And I said, no, they're not. And she said, well, why do you have this? And she proceeded to go into my glove compartment. She pulled it out. And once she took the cap off it, she realized that I said, are you speaking about that? I said, that's my grandson's medicine syringe. She told me that I was being disrespectful, that if I didn't shut my mouth, that she would, you know, arrest me. And I'm like, don't I have, you know, I was asking that you asked me.
Well, don't Tracy, let me stop you there, because and we need to really be clear. And that's why, you know, I said earlier, as difficult as it may be, we need to separate the emotion from the law. Being disrespectful is not against the law. However, illegal search and seizure, that's a whole different ball of wax. Explain briefly to me, if you can, Mr. Perloff, why people should be concerned, like Tracy, when an officer is reaching, you know, perhaps, you know, into a car or beginning to ask questions or ask to search a car or your home when they do not necessarily have a warrant. And explain to me what that probable cause thing means.
Sure. So, and first of all, to everyone who's listening in who has concerns, we welcome you to contact with those concerns. Our email address is intake@acludc.org. and we will respond to them and review them. And if we can help, we will let you know. Turning to the issue of what constitutes a legal search and seizure, it's actually a fairly complicated set of issues. There are a lot of instances where officers don't need a warrant to conduct a search. In many cases, all they need is probable cause. Now, generally, that's not true in the home, but in the car context, it generally, in fact, is true that officers can search your car when it's on the road without having a warrant if they have probable cause, or in some cases, even less than that. So what's important to remember about interacting with police officers in these situations is that you need to, first of all, you don't want to give them more power than they have. So I think one of the things we see in a lot of cases, in a lot of criminal cases, is that people consent to a search when they don't have to do so. So if an officer comes and stops you, the first thing you want to ask the officer is, am I free to leave? And if the officer says no, that should give you an insight that you in that circumstance have been seized or stopped in some manner, and the officer is now detaining you. And if the officer says that you are free to leave, then you can go and you don't have to endure any more of that interaction. It's also important to know that if the officer asks to search you, you can say no. Now, there are circumstances where the officer can search anyway, even if you do say no. And we want, you know, everyone who is interacting with the police to be safe and to recognize that, you know, these interactions can be dangerous. And so being respectful and not trying to escalate it can be really important to protecting your safety and preventing an arrest. But, you know, if you ask, if the officer asks and if you say no, the officer might, in fact, not be able to search you. So that's another really helpful, I think, piece of advice for these circumstances that can prevent you from having a negative encounter with the police officer, or having the police officer discovering something that you don't want them to find, or even searching places that you don't want them to find. It's not just that you may have some sort of contraband on you, but it's just your personal privacy that's at stake and your personal dignity that's at stake with having an officer troll around your glove compartment or the interior of your car. So, you know, I think that not giving the officers more authority than they need to have under the Constitution is important, and just asking those basic questions can help. But at the same time, not putting yourself in a position for an altercation if the officer goes farther than you think they should.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Thank you so much for your phone call. I do need to say, Ms. Price, that in watching the video, you exercised a great deal of restraint. Not only because of the emotional situation that you were under, having lost your son a week before, but also just realizing, and not speaking for you, but I can only assume that you realized that there was something at the very minimum not right with why the police showed up at your house. How were you able to stay calm during that time?
I was able to stay calm due to my personality. I never really get escalated over the problem. Even when I'm being disrespected, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, and I did use my manners when I asked them to leave. I said, please, and still disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, as you can see with my body language, I would back up because I didn't want to touch him in any kind of way to give him a reason to have something, you know.
Well, you're never close in the video to him.
That's why I was keeping my distance.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did she do the right thing? You can hear her. She said earlier, if they had asked, that she would not have had a problem with them searching. Was that the right thing to do?
Well, I think that that's a personal choice for people who are in those circumstances. If you decide that the officer comes to you and says, hey, there's a serious concern about potential danger to you and your family, I want to look around and make sure everything is safe here, then maybe you would feel comfortable allowing the officer to conduct a search there. And it sounds like Ms. Price would have been in that circumstance. On the other hand, if you have if the officer doesn't present that sort of scenario, or if you're concerned that there might be a case of the officer finding something on your property that they mistake for some form of contraband, or if you do have some form of contraband, then you want to think about the situation a little bit differently. So I think that each person is entitled to make that decision, and it's important to know that you have the right to make that decision. In fact, one of the things that we're advocating for in front of the D.C. Council is for a statute that would require affirmative consent. That is, it would make it a more robust form of consent than just, you know, a non-response or something like that, so that the officers really have to know and get your approval before they go investigating your property. And we think that would help to make sure people know about their rights and exercise their rights in a way that they feel comfortable with doing.
Dee, calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name is Dee, and I just want to give my condolences to the family. I have a son myself, and I can understand very much of what they're going through. I understand the police officer's job, and I know that it's stressful, but to lose a son, that is very hard. And to search their property like that, that is unconstitutional. So something really needs to be done. That's all I want to say. Something really needs to be done about that.
Thank you so much for sharing with us, Dee. I want to broaden this conversation because over the past month or so, there have been a couple of high-profile incidents where juveniles, and I use that term specifically, a 10-year-old child was handcuffed, suspected of assaulting a man during the course of a robbery. That turned out not to be true. A week or so ago, a 9-year-old also handcuffed. When it comes to that kind of situation, very young children, suspects though they may be, we are still talking about pre-adolescent children. Is that, in your opinion, an appropriate way to address the detention of a child when they may be suspected of something?
I think, you know, talking about treating children in general, it's important that when you're an officer, you recognize that you're dealing with a child. And the Supreme Court, in cases not in this specific context but in other contexts, has repeatedly made clear that children are different. And of course, we know that children are different. The child in one of the incidents you mentioned soiled himself when the officers handcuffed him. And so I think that's all that we really need to see to know that the common sense conclusion really applies here. When you're an officer dealing with a child, you should be very reluctant to go to handcuffing, to go to force, just as a matter of policy and as a matter of course and a matter of basic decency. I think that it is consistent with our concern across the board with MPD that the department resorts to aggressive tactics when they may not need to. You know, you can talk to a child. In one of the cases, for example, the child was just talking back to the officer. So you can restrain yourself and you don't have to make an arrest in any capacity in that circumstance. In large part, you can't because talking back to an officer is not against the law. In the case of Ms. Price, you know, the officer didn't have to go into the yard. He could have asked. And so resorting to the most aggressive option first is a concern we have about the department more generally. And we think that it's incumbent upon the leadership of the department to take a look at these sorts of incidents and say, how can we find more effective ways to de-escalate conflict? How can we find ways to show the community more respect? Because I think something, Ms. Price, you said yesterday, if you want the community to respect you as police officers and work with you as police officers in addressing neighborhood problems, you need to respect the community back.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk to Ray calling from D.C. Also, I believe that is Maryland. Calling from Maryland. So please stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Are DC police officers overstepping when it comes to dealing with the community, particularly east of the river? We're talking about it. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation examining allegations that some D.C. police officers are abusing their power, or some of them crossing the line. Let me go back to the phone lines. Ray, calling from D.C., thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Yes, I wanted to give condolences to the family. I also want to bring up an issue with the crossing the line. I notice officers here in the Washington area who seem to be extremely aggressive, and I also notice this across the country with different cases. When these officers come either to your home, to your business, and even with the incident with the child, they take offense early on. They're very aggressive. I want to know if these officers have been put through psychological program, or do they get training through that? Some of these officers, they're coming from homes where they are having problems with their family, their spouse, or whatever they have going on, and they bring that to the street, and it seems like they want to take it out on the first person they can get to who they can overpower or be abusive to and or be aggressive with.
Let me stop you there, Ray, only because I can't say that any of my guests here, unless perhaps Mr. Perloff can speak to those issues as it relates to any interaction that the ACLU has had with police in this particular issue. But I'm not sure that my guests, and certainly not I, would be qualified to address whether or not police officers are getting mental evaluations. I think that would definitely be a question for the police. But certainly I think that is a concern about how how the community may be treated when they are interacting with the police.
Well, that's right. I mean, I can't speak to the psychological evaluation component. I do want to say, though, that we have had some concerns about the Narcotics and Special Investigations Division. We had a client we represented who was searched repeatedly in the groin and crotch area by an officer with that division. That officer had a disciplinary hearing, and during that hearing it came out that many officers thought that was the right way to conduct themselves. So we have concerns about officers being trained and encouraged to police in an aggressive manner, and we've called for MPD to we've called for the council to demand an audit of the Narcotics and Special Investigations Division, because we are concerned about the aggressive tactics in that division. So I think that goes back to, again, we were talking about before, resorting to aggressive tactics first when there are other ways to resolve a problem.
Mm-hmm. Ray, thank you so much. To that point, however, and you may remember, and I suspect that that my other guests, being D.C. residents, remember that there's been that controversy during the administration of D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier about jump out squads, and the argument was that to curtail some of the more violent elements of the city, that you needed an aggressive police force to deal with these, but then you had other people in the community who were saying that these aggressive tactics were very, very much counter to positive community and police interaction. While this particular incident may not have had the aggressiveness of the jump out squad, do you believe that this is the same kind of thing?
It's very much the same tactics. They use in different terminology. It's the same tactics. When we look at the jump out squads back in the day when they were violating constitutional rights on a regular, and you look at what these officers are doing currently, they are the same exact tactics. You know, sometimes I think constitutionally you're supposed to have a reasonable suspicion or a probable cause to, to jump out and search an individual. So what they're doing is jumping out, snatching people up, searching them without consent, and then trying to establish a reasonable suspicion. And that's kind of backwards to me. That's not the order of events that's supposed to happen. And they're the exact same tactics. And if you listen to some of the statements that Chief Newsom makes, and some of the local hearings, some of the ANC community, he brags about, this is what I've been doing for 30 years. He never separated the differences. And in reference to the mental health piece, Bigelow, the union representative, said in a hearing that he knows that officers are dealing with secondary trauma. Chief Dickerson has said multiple occasions that her officers are dealing with secondary trauma. Well, get them help. Get them off the streets. It's not fair to the community to have these officers on the street that you are saying that you know have or are aware of having secondary trauma on the streets because they're traumatizing the community. They're not fit for duty. And that's not fair to the community. And it's going to lead to more assaults, more brutal interactions with the community.
Mm. Let me go to Maryland. Marilyn calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm very disappointed that no one has contacted the mayor and had the mayor to come on the radio station to discuss why this is continually on. It's been on television, but then they move it across to something else. Mayor Bowser needs to be contacted over and over again because everyone knows that this is not new in Washington, D.C. You know it, I know it, and everyone else that was raised in Washington, D.C. knows that, that these are some of the things that they've done in the air, in the different areas, and yes, they're being addressed, but what is being done? And what the person said before about the mentality is so accurate. Their mentality of this aggressiveness that they have, this power that they feel as if they have, it's over everything that's in the entire United States. It's not just D.C. It's all over. So until the mentality and the aggressiveness and the power that the people feel that they have over others when they come into your businesses, the police are just, they're overly aggressive.
Okay.
And getting help is it may be part of the answer, but it starts at a young age when they decide that they want to become a police officer.
Okay.
And
well, Marilyn, thank you so much for sharing with us. I only have a few minutes left, and I have a couple of questions. Mr. Perloff, as of filing this suit, have you heard any response from the Metropolitan Police Department at all?
None other than the comment from the police unions. Obviously, that doesn't speak for the department itself.
Mm-hmm. There was a report yesterday that the officer involved, Officer Gupton, had been disciplined, but the details of that had not been released. Had you heard anything about that at all?
So what we know from MPD is that Officer Gupton and Officer Whitehead and the other officer who was involved in that incident were disciplined for their failure to communicate. We don't know the full scope of that discipline. What we also have reason to believe from the letter we received from MPD is that, at least in that letter, there was no discussion of any investigation or discipline from the constitutional violation. We think that's a really big problem because while it's better if people violate your constitutional rights politely, we're of the opinion that officers shouldn't be violating your constitutional rights at all. And so we're concerned that MPD may have failed to investigate that or discipline them for that, even though Ms. Price raised the issue of unconstitutional conduct in her complaint to the Office of Police Complaints.
Ms. Price, I started with you, and I want to end with you. What do you want to see come from this legal action, this lawsuit by the ACLU?
I would like to see change, more police training on how to deal with the community. And furthermore, the respect and the communication of the police officers when they're dealing with the community.
And you certainly are, I'm sure, still awaiting for, you know, a final disposition as it relates to the disposition of the case regarding the passing of your son.
Can you say that again?
In other words, I'm sure that, you know, the situation regarding the death of your son is still unresolved legally, and I'm sure that that is a concern.
Yes, it is.
And finally, Mr. Perloff, what do you hope will come out of this legal action?
What we hope is change and greater respect. You know, like I said before, we think that officers shouldn't be violating constitutional rights if they communicate about it or if they don't. We think that there are too many instances of officers acting aggressively in neighborhoods of color when they have no reason to do so, when there are other strategies. We think that it's important for MPD to give the community the respect that they deserve and respect their rights as the Constitution demands. And we hope that this lawsuit will begin the process of change to achieve those goals.
Something just occurred to me. This happened in May, but do you feel safe in the wake of what has happened?
Do I feel safe in my community in reference to how police are policing?
And what happened that day?
No, I'm in fear for my life every day with the police. The unconstitutional policing in our community is unacceptable. So I'm walking on eggshells. You know, it's very painful and emotionally draining. I like to see, and I think my sister like to see, more constitutional policing and the more training is one thing, but when you're making a conscious choice to ignore the training, it's something else.
I want to thank all of you for coming in, Denise Price, Jay Brown, Attorney Michael Perloff, and certainly, you know, for the family, you certainly have my condolences, and I appreciate you coming in and talking to us. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, April 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.